Welcome to the studio, Marie.
Oh, thank you, Aaron. And Atamari and Whangaroa.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Today we thought we'd talk about responding out of trauma. So those times where you feel like you either got a fight.
Flight or freeze.
Flight, fight or freeze. And it's afterwards you're like, well, that wasn't the reaction I really wanted to give in that moment. So when we say responding out of trauma too, Marie, what does that mean? Like, yeah, can you unpack that sentence even?
Yeah, because it is quite a big loaded sentence, isn't it? So responding out of trauma is really our nervous system and how our body reacts in the moment. It's very quick response to something where we're feeling overwhelmed or we feel threatened or we feel cornered in some way. A lot of people who don't have, you know, real trauma in their life may respond really well in those situations and be able to negotiate or be able to walk away from something without feeling like their whole system is, you know, under attack in some way. A person who hasn't had trauma could respond quite peacefully in a situation and look very wise and in control and very mature.
Potentially.
I mean, it's a great look. I'd love to have that look. I aim for that look. It would be great to have gone through life and be able to experience something that is overwhelming and not be put back into trauma in that moment. I'd love to have a life like that, Aaron. So I say that quite with a lot of aroha in that for people who have trauma in their life and also for those that don't have trauma in their life, because how lucky are you to never have to experience what it is like to go offline in a moment and be, you know, everyone looking at you and you're not knowing what to do. You're not the person you were 2 minutes ago. you're not responding the same.
So, and I guess for the person watching, if you spot that someone's, that's probably what's happening to someone, pointing that out to them at the time is probably not going to help. It looks like you're responding out of trauma there.
Poor people. It's a difficult one because we're not all therapists out there recognizing when people are getting triggered or, you know, that's a word that we use, getting triggered, but actually a person is going into trauma or is responding out of trauma. And we don't know what's gone on in people's lives and the reactions people might give, and we can get very judgy over the reactions that people give in a moment and go, what's wrong? You know, what are you on? Or what are you, you know, we tend to think negatively about a person instead of actually going in and helping and supporting that person.
So as a counsellor, you must have moments when you're counselling someone where, because you're venturing into difficult territory, where you do trigger a response out of trauma. And so as a counsellor, you're the pro. How do you handle those moments?
Yeah.
Because you've got to get this session back on track.
Yeah, you do.
Or you want to.
Yeah. I mean, some of those moments can be very helpful moments in a therapy session. But for me, when I know that somebody is going offline like that, or they've... Yeah, it's not often I would take somebody into trauma, Aaron, so I have to kind of pull that back a little bit, because even though I work with trauma, I don't want to re-traumatise somebody with their story. So I'm very strong on that one. Like, a person doesn't have to tell me their story if they don't want to, because I don't want to re-traumatise them. But if a person is in trauma, I feel that, you know, it's looking like they're on shaky ground, let's take a moment. Let's just take a moment. Let's just pause. I use the word pause, not stop. Let's just pause here. Let's just breathe. Drop your shoulders. I drop my voice down. Everything slows down, Aaron.
Yeah.
So the worst thing we can do is get really hyped up and take our voice to a level which is matching theirs, and then we're like, ah! You know, we're right there with them, you know, and we are engaging at that level, which is not a good level to engage from. So if you're...
Well, that's the thing. You might both end up operating
absolutely.
Out of there.
And you could take you could both end up engaging out of trauma responses rather than having a conversation that you might be able to work out. So, yeah, when you go offline like that, it's really helpful if a person is around you that notices you're offline. You know, a lot of us don't notice that a person is, responding out of trauma, and we can needle them more, we can hassle them more, we can make the situation a lot worse than it is, just because the person is responding badly and we are now annoyed by them and responding badly back, so we're not withdrawing and going, actually this person isn't behaving like they normally would, let's just slow everything down, let's just take a moment, let's just breathe. That great song I played on Friday. I'm talking about, music is a great thing, and there is a song called Breathe, and it's a great song, and really sometimes we just need to breathe. Drop our shoulders down, feel our feet on the ground, just ground ourselves.
Yeah,
I've heard
that.
Yeah, well, they call it the grounding exercise. So it's breathing, to get our breath back online is to calm the nervous system down, to get oxygen back into the body. Because when we are responding out of trauma, we are gasping for air. So, because what's happening in the body, all the blood is rushing to the heart and the brain to keep it working. So it doesn't care about the extremities of your fingers and arms and hands and legs. The body just goes into trauma response, and that is, let's just keep alive. So all the blood and everything is pumping to the head and the heart to keep it going, and the body is under immense stress. So that is actually what's happening when we go into trauma. The body is stressed to the max because it's trying to function and it can't.
Yeah.
So we have to get oxygen back in the body. That is what it is needing. So that is why breath is the way through to come back from going offline or anxiety, breathing. Everything is about the breath, slowing your voice down, calming your voice down, bringing your shoulders down, getting back into your body. Getting breath in, so breathing in through the nose, good deep breaths into the gut and out through the mouth. And there's a reason for that, to come in through the nose and out through the mouth. It's how to get the oxygen right into the lungs, into the bottom of the lungs. Because when we anxious breathe, we breathe through the mouth. We go like this. We're trying to grab air, And so the oxygen's only just getting to the top of the lungs and the body is panicking. It needs more oxygen, needs to function. So we try and take more breath and we can't get the oxygen in. So we need to calm, lower the shoulders, lower the voice, take a good breath in through the nose, hold, push out the gut, and then out through the mouth and let it all out and drop your shoulders as you do it. And you'll feel your whole body start to come back online and... But it's a process, and none of us are aware, or most of us aren't aware of the process. And so if we can't help a person to come down from trauma, then what we're probably engage with that trauma and work at their level, which will just make it worse. Everyone gets on high alert.
Yeah.
And we're in defense mode. Mm.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder how often that's happening. A lot.
And I look, we use the word trauma, and I do too, as a blanket statement for things that have affected us strongly in our life, had an impact on our nervous system, had an impact on our thinking and how we respond and how we even think about ourselves. So, I guess back in the day, I think trauma was, sexual abuse, domestic violence, abuse in the home, neglect, all those sort of things. Big things that we thought about with trauma. But I would like to say today, in the days that we live in now, I think a lot of people are carrying trauma that looks quite different. We've got trauma from being... you know, having to uplift ourselves from one place to another. So, and living in places that we don't want to live. You know, there's trauma in having to move from our place that we wanted to live, and we've had to go somewhere else for a job, or, you know, to survive. There's trauma in that. You know, there's trauma in losing your job. There's trauma in losing your home. There's trauma in not being able to pay your bills, and you're constantly on edge all the time. Mm. You know, this is what we are. These are trauma that we're looking at in the days that we live in that don't kind of look like the trauma where I came from in those days, which was far more about abuse and the impact of that. So I think, yeah, a lot of people are carrying trauma in them. It's our nervous, let's just go there, it's our nervous system is pretty much shot because we are always constantly under fire over something. So, yeah, we live in a highly charged environment, and we need. It would be good for us to be aware of this, that we are highly charged when we go to work, we're highly charged when we come home, we're highly charged when we're on the roads. We are, you know,
well, there's lots of my experience is there's lots of employers who use semi-abusive tactics for keeping staff working hard.
Yeah, well, there's that kind, you know, there's so
like
much.
Like I found some workplaces just, probably basically traumatic to be involved with.
And so I wouldn't work in a place like that, right? But then I have the option to say no to that. And if you don't have the option to say no to a stressful work environment, then you're living under the impact of something that is going to affect you in your daily life because you're not happy. You're not happy in that environment. So it is going to carry, you know, that to me is, I wouldn't call that trauma as so much as being in a really unhealthy environment, toxic environment. But do it long enough and it will become traumatic for you because your life will lose its zest. So it's unhealthy for us to put ourselves in places where we are consistently feeling undervalued or, you know, shamed in any way in our job or work situation. That can roll out to look like trauma. You know, give it a year, give it 2 years, your whole self-esteem, your personality will be affected by that. It's not a healthy, it's toxic. So yeah, not a very happy picture, is it? Sorry about that. It's just very sad. But we do need to change our attitude and how we treat each other, and take that responsibility maybe to be looking out for others and not needle people in the moment when we can see that it's really upsetting them. You know, I think we need to take the responsibility, take a step back, and go, actually, I'm probably hurting this person. What could I do to help them? You know, one thing is to not engage with that high, intense moment, but step back and have some compassion for the person and go, okay, I'm just going to leave this, and I'm just going to let you just calm down. Or I wouldn't say that. Calm down is the worst thing to say. calm down. You know, that's not the word you want to say. Calm down. You're going over the top. What's happening? You know, just lower your voice. Don't even say that. Just lower your voice to them. Can I make you a cup of tea? You know, would you like me to do something for you? What do you need right now? Do you like me to get you a blanket? Like, do you want to just, like, keep warm? Like, you know, like, do you want to just sit? What do you want to do? And if they don't want to do anything, then don't do anything. If they want to say, just leave me alone for 5 minutes, then leave them alone. You know, go and put the jug on and go and do something else and try not to engage with it and make it bigger than it is, because the worst thing for a person in trauma, it's very embarrassing, one thing, when you come out of it and you know just how off the Richter scale you were, and then you have to try and explain yourself. So it's really horrible for the person. So we've got to be aware of that, you know, that. And it takes days for a person to come back from that too. Like, you know, your whole nervous system has gone on high alert. It's released a whole lot of toxic chemicals into your body. Body needs to be able to come back from that now. So, Be kind and gentle to ourselves, because those are the times when our immune system can go down too, because we've been attacked in some ways that we're not seeing physically, but how our body's responded to something, it has gone on high alert. It has released a whole lot of chemicals in there that now the body needs to get rid of. You've got to be calm in that and be kind to yourself.
Go for a run? Do something physical?
Yeah, you could do. Some people drink lots of water. Drink lots of water.
Okay, all right.
Toxins. Get the toxins out. Get fresh air. Go for head out to the seawater. We're so lucky here, out to the bush. Get some good oxygen into you.
Yeah.
Anything that's going to clear those systems out, and it's kind of like looking at a frayed end. You know, you want to kind of smooth those frayed ends out a bit. Just, you know, be a bit kind and gentle.
So what about long term learning how to handle those situations? If you've got some quite serious trauma, some capital T trauma, and it's popping up a lot. How do you work through that with someone?
Yep. So I have capital T trauma.
Right.
And so
it's good that you're laughing about it now, Marie.
Yeah, well, I can laugh about it because I have to work with it, Aaron. Yeah. It's never going to go away. That I have come to realise in my life that we can have all the tool sets in the world to try and work with ourselves, but you've got to find what works for you. And so lots of people can give us advice on doing this or doing that, but you've got to figure it out. You can be given the tools, pick up what works for you. So I've come to understand that trauma is always going to be there for me. So whenever I push myself to do something new or push myself to be in environments that aren't comfortable for me, it's like a speeding bullet for me. And I have to breathe, Aaron. I have to remain online. I have to self-talk. It's okay, Marie. I can feel my heart racing. I can feel my whole body resisting what I'm doing. But I have to bring myself back and remind myself that I'm safe, I'm okay. There's a whole lot of things that I might be doing to try and calm myself. I might use laughter. I might, use silliness to try and bring myself back into feeling okay. Like I say, I can have all the skill sets, but in the moment when somebody is so overwhelmed, it's really difficult to manage that. So really helpful if you've got people around you in your life that recognise that, can help you and support you and not make you feel worse than what you already feel.
So can we talk about the...
Yeah, we can.
The training. So Marie's actually training to be one of our DJs. She's going to do a show middays Friday, and you might even have heard her during the training last Friday. But what you couldn't see was actually how nervous you were. And it was really weird for me because I'm used to every 2 weeks we sit here and we chat, and you're in the expert chair there, and you're the expert, and you're calm and you're soothing the audience that might need soothing. You know, there's an element of that to it. So to have that flipped, and we were in opposite chairs as well, just to like reinforce this whole scenario, and you were really quite nervous about being talking on the radio, like really nervous. And it was, and you were using, I think you were using silliness as a way to,
Silliness is something that is my go-to, and for people who don't know me, that could even look worse. So I'm like,
I don't know whether to join in the silliness.
Yeah, they don't know what's going on with me. I don't know. But, I'm doing my best. That's all I know in the situation. So, let's go there, because Friday was massive for me, and I didn't realise the impact that it would have on me to swap seats and do what you're doing. My whole brain just went offline. It just shut down.
It did at times. I had to just say, do that.
Yeah, and you probably will have to again because I'm a patterns person.
Yeah.
So I learn by patterns, and they're comfortable for me. And so once I know the pattern, I feel safe.
Yeah, and it's like driving a car, learning to drive a car, in the sense that there's several things going on at the same time.
And there's, to me, there's huge responsibility in that. And people are hearing you. And I know there's huge responsibility on this end, but it's really weird to be on that end and know that, I don't know, I can't even explain it, Aaron. The responsibility is massive, how I felt that.
Yeah.
And how I responded to that, which was every negative thought that could possibly come up was coming up.
You believed it was sounding truly awful.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it wasn't at all. I've had far worse first timers on the air.
And see, even saying that, my whole system like, no, I'm not believing that. And yet I have to tell myself, you know, Aaron's trying to speak a truth to me and he's trying to give me some information. So I have to try and get past my first response, which is, yeah, you're just saying that. You know, and that is my first response in most things. And that has never gone away.
So that's from when you were young.
Yeah, and that's never going to go away. All these years, it hasn't, still not going to go away. So I have to bypass that.
But does it rear its head less, though?
Oh, yeah, you definitely.
Want some reassurance that there is some.
Yeah, yeah, definitely rears its head a lot less. The more confident I become in what I do, the less that I experienced that, but Friday brought it all back for me.
Yeah.
And I went home zapped. I had nothing left in the tank. I'd used everything up, and yet I'd done very little. So it was amazing for me to experience that again and know that I can go right back into those places in a moment. But I know what's happening, and I know the impact that's going to have on me, and it's not going to take me out. Back in the day, it would have taken me out. It would have been like, I would have heard so much bad kickback in my head. It probably would have just, I would never have come back. Because it's interesting, Aaron, I did actually try and do the radio show when I first came to Raglan, and on my own. I did, when it was at the school.
Oh, wow.
Yes, right back. Came here and there was a guy doing the radio then. Yeah, but I only came out once and it was too much for me and I never came back again.
Right.
But, yeah, interesting. I had tried right back then, but too much, and I didn't have the skill set to. It was just an absolute brick wall for me.
So when you say skill set, you mean the skill set of handling the trauma response?
Yeah, and knowing what was happening in my body. And knowing what was happening for myself, because your whole, everything hits rock bottom, your self-esteem. I revert back to my younger years very quickly, don't have a good view of myself in a moment, right? This happens in a moment, and it's more of a feeling than it is a thinking process that comes later.
But the interesting thing is, and it's almost kind of bizarre in some ways, because you're a counsellor, you're giving me high-level feedback about what's happening with you. And you're like, because I'll say something and you'll say, no, I didn't get any of that. And I'm like, I was sitting there going, what do I do now?
And that's like, true.
Make sure the song's playing and we'll get the microphone off.
Thought you did really well. You didn't over-question me and you just kind of pointed
to what... There is a tendency to want to do that.
Yeah.
To keep, like, for me, my thing is to over-explain when...
Yeah, and like, you started
when I go back to being the little boy explaining to the adults. Right, I just want to over-explain.
And you've got a little girl who's sitting in trauma going, you're giving me too much words, I can't handle it. Like, that's exactly played out like that. So I was telling you I can't take any more information, because I actually wasn't registering.
Yeah.
At all. It was just flying past me like, all I needed to know is, what do I push up, what do I push down, and how does it work? And if you try and explain more than that, it's just too much, and the brain cannot hold that. But it would be very different for somebody who was sitting here confidently, and they'd probably retain all of that information. How wonderful an experience. I don't know what that's like to be able to do that.
It's always a thing for me about how much information to give, and how, because you don't know at what point the person you're talking to is getting overloaded.
I'm probably on it more. I'm able to say, I can't, you know, that information isn't, I'm not receiving it.
Because I understand about that.
Yeah, but if I'd said that to somebody who had no clue and doesn't want to know about this sort of thing, they wouldn't even know what I was talking about.
Yeah, they would think this is pretty wacky.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying it's important for us to take the time and take some responsibility, because there's lots of people walking around with trauma in them, and we don't know. It's not our responsibility to, you know, whether we trigger somebody, but it is our responsibility in how we respond to that person. If we realise then we have caused them distress in what we're saying.
But generally, well, you say it's not our response not to trigger people, but there are some limits, like jokes about rape, you know.
Yeah, stuff, yeah. I mean, if like somebody that, like, did that to me nowadays and
cause there are some
said
young
something
guys,
in front of me, I'd be like, yeah, I'd call it out. I'd yeah, call
as,
it out.
as young guys, we sometimes don't know where those lines are, you know.
No.
I'm not saying I'm young, but I was once.
That's age is a thing lately. Yeah, that I'm realising I'm getting older, Aaron. I'm having to work with that. It's not been something I've had to think about.
It can be a little bit annoying.
It is quite annoying, actually, yeah. Because twice I've been asked if I wanted a gold card thingy. I can't believe it. I'm not even there. I'm just going to put this out. I'm not there yet, folks. Can stop asking me if I want a gold card. All right, I'm going to have to dye my hair. I said to the lady behind me, I'm going to have to dye my hair. And she had white hair. And she said, don't dye your hair. And I'm like, well, I think I'm going to have to, because twice I've been asked, Aaron, I'm like a bit over this. But I'm going to. But it's made me realise that I'm going over to the threshold. Here, I'm starting to move into what younger people consider to be old age. I'm like, oh.
It's what you used to be.
What does this look like? And how do we even do this? I don't know how to do this.
What attitudes did you have, negative attitudes did you have to old people when you were young that are still with you now that you're going to accidentally turn on yourself? This is a question.
I didn't have. I liked old people because, I mean, I grew up quite respectful around the older generation and had far more respect for them than they probably did for me, so, yeah, which is a truth. They probably looked at me like, oh, you know, soul and mother, here you go, and getting your money out on a Tuesday. You're a soul and mother, aren't you? They did look down on us a bit, but yeah, I don't know. I didn't. I grew up with respect around our older people, so
okay.
Hopefully, yeah, I don't know if it's going to be the same as when I get older. Oh, I'm there, aren't I? Okay, so when now, I don't know if it's going to be the same with our younger generation, how they're going to behave to people like me.
I had this thing about, frankly, middle-aged white guys. I remember looking at a booklet about the Auckland Council when I was living up there in my early 20s, like 20, and looking at the photos of all the councillors who were mostly male at that point, and kind of, they were fat, not in the physical sense, although some of them were, but fat in the mental sense, and that they got more than their fair share. That's what I read from it, and I didn't like that they were the class of people who ran things.
Right.
And I didn't like them. I distinctly remember looking at this picture of these councillors and going,
You saw a class distinction.
Yeah, but also as an age thing as well, and yeah. But now I am that age.
Yes.
And I'm not a counsellor.
So isn't that, yeah, okay.
And we're talking, Maria's a counsellor therapist. I'm talking about counsellors for Auckland City Council at the time.
Yeah, so totally different.
So people with a little bit of power. And I felt very negatively towards them. But now I think I still have a little bit of that attitude in me. And what I do is I think I project it onto other people. Now we're getting to a counselling session here. I assume other people are thinking that about me now.
Yeah,
because that's what I thought.
Yeah,
when I was
young. I wish that worked for me because
why I asked about how you feel about old people.
When I was younger, I used to think older people had it lucky because people listened to them, and they could make decisions, and they had authority. Truly, that's how I saw anyone that was older than me by about, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. They had far more position over. And so I felt quite inferior, and I couldn't wait to grow up and be an older person so that people would listen to me.
So did that feeling go away after 5 or 10 years?
No.
Yeah.
And it has never gone away.
Oh, really? Okay.
Actually, Aaron, it doesn't matter now, even though I'm older, I'm like, now I'm here and it's not the truth. I've realised it's not the truth, and younger people don't, you know, that's how I felt towards older people, because of where I wasn't, because I wasn't being heard in my own life.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't wait to get to an age where I was being heard. That was, you know.
Except you must have got to a point where you were at least more heard, but maybe you didn't notice it because you had that feeling inside.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty strong in me too. It's because it's still there. Mm. That feeling and that idea in me is still there. That everyone else is, you know, probably knows a little bit more. You don't really know enough, you know. You never quite get there.
If you want to be heard,
it's a lie.
If you want to be heard, having a radio show is a good start, I found.
I often have to remind myself of things in my own life because, yeah, you do tend to forget. And these things set in us from an early age. Like I say, they just don't go away. You just become more skilled in being able to notice them and work through them or work with them.
Yeah.
And so that's working with yourself and working with how you respond. So I know that I don't like, I'm not confident in public speaking, although I'd like to do public speaking because there's lots of things I'd like to speak about, Aaron.
Yeah.
But when you put me in front of people and there's all those eyes watching me, and I've tried to explain this to other people who haven't had trauma like me, and they don't get it. They're like, I'll just get over it, you know. And yeah. But I just, oh, it takes a lot for me to be able to stand up while people are watching. And I have to work myself through that. And I want to do that. I want to be able to develop myself to be able to feel confident in places and not feel like, yeah, this is, you know.
So were you nervous the first time I interviewed you?
Gosh, that's a long time ago now, Aaron. Yeah. I think I was just absolutely surprised that you would even consider having me on the radio back then. I think I was just amazed by how silly you were. I was like, what is wrong with this guy?
What a lunatic.
On the street. Oh, you want to do a radio show? Like, I'm like, okay.
I actually remember I was chatting to you on the seat just inside the supper room.
Yeah.
And
it was just a conversation. Yeah. And that's how long
ago.
Well,
you hid your feelings well. You seemed enthusiastic.
Well, I probably was because I was like, wow, you know. Well, I would have been because I'm always excited to be able to give people information on what might support them. Or enlighten people to help others. Or maybe open our eyes up to realise our humanity is we're on a thin line at the moment and we need to be more human towards each other and all these sort of things that I'm really grateful for that we can talk about and discuss and bring up for other people who may never be able to talk about those subjects.
So if there's for people who are recognizing that they are responding out of trauma a lot, what's some things they can do? I mean, counselling sounds like obviously one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look, I think you've got to get to know yourself, really, your personality type. The Myers-Briggs personality type's always a good one to do. Online, you can do it free. You can pay for it and find out more. But you can do the free. I think there's a free one, which just gives you the basics about your personality. Find out your personality first, because sometimes our personality and the trauma we've been through, our personality might be quite inward anyway. And so, and if we've been through trauma, you know, we might have more to deal with to try and bring ourselves out of our shell.
Right.
So don't be too hard on yourself if you're not like somebody else who's had trauma and they're doing oh so much better than you in your mind and somebody's, you know, in our mind. That's not a truth. You're doing the best. You're actually doing amazing, and you're doing the best that you know how in your situation. So always be kind and gentle to yourself. Get to know your personality. Are you an introvert or an extrovert? You know, do you what helps you to feel relaxed? You know, is it a hot bath, a hot shower? Is it cold water on your face that makes you come back? You know, sometimes just putting cold water on your face is a good way of. Oh, just feeling refreshed and back online, you know.
Yeah.
Is it music? Do you need, you know, is music some way that you calm yourself or to help you feel elevated and amazing when you're feeling down? You know, what fires you? What works for you? You know, do you need to go and have a really good yarn with your girlfriends or your guy friends or whatever it is? Do you need to be around people and extrovert? You know, they need to be active and activated in that. You know, do you need to go for a run? You need to go to the gym and be around people? Or, you know, what fills your bucket makes you feel human again and not like a piece of something stuck on the bottom of a shoe. You know, that you're trying to get rid of and don't want to carry inside.
Is that how you felt when you were younger?
Oh, probably. Yeah. So, well, I didn't think I existed in the world around me because I didn't think anyone saw me, Aaron. And nobody did see me. I mean, I was a street kid. I lived on the streets. Yeah. Nobody saw me.
You made yourself invisible.
I made myself invisible. I was the lost kids. There was many of us back then in the 70s and 80s, you know. Lost kids, street kids. We were street kids. We knew how to gather and be family towards each other, but were we seen in society? Absolutely not. We were just the little rats scattering around the streets trying to disappear from everybody.
That phrase, street kids, I haven't heard that much.
Well, I grew up with that. We were street kids, street rats. Yeah, street kids.
Presumably we have street adults now, don't we?
Well, I don't even know if we have street kids anymore. I guess we call them homeless people.
Yeah, that's why I say, because there's adults. Yeah, like in the 70s, there wasn't a heck of a lot of homelessness in this country.
You know, in the 70s and 80s, there were lots of kids running away from homes.
Yeah, well, that was the thing that was...
That was so sad. When I think about it, it's very sad. When I think back about the amount of kids that I knew... In survival mode, living on the streets, was massive.
Yeah. So where did you sleep?
Probably under your house. I slept under somebody's house. Yep, I did, on my own. Slept under people's houses, under bridges. When I was living in Henderson, back then there was, down by the railway tracks, there was this old shed, so a lot of us street kids would sleep in the shed. Just a tin shed that used to be down there. I think it was known as a place where a lot of the street kids went. All around Howick, there were different places that the kids just knew to go. Just like homeless people know where the safe places are to sleep, under bridges. You know, you find spots that are warm and out of the weather and, yeah, telephone boxes back then we used to use. Depending, eh?
Got this.
Wherever.
Not exactly a... five-star hotel, is it a telephone box? You can only stand up.
Well, actually, no. I remember once tearing up a phone book and putting all the paper around the edges of the phone box to keep it warm.
Oh, wow.
The things that we do, you know, survival mode, you know. So survival mode for me is massive because when you've been a street kid and you've lived like that, you know, you're always in survival mode. So that's just surviving, let alone surviving through trauma.
When did you stop doing that?
When the police caught me. Because that's what they did. They did the roundup of the street rats, right, of the street kids, yeah, and they would just hunt us down in their cars. I've got some massive stories around that one. Yeah, I remember being chased by police over fields and, yeah, all sorts.
Wow.
Yeah, they'd do a big catch, you know, and you just see all these rats.
We've talked about a lot of this stuff in your background that informs your counselling work, but I haven't heard about this.
Oh, there's lots before. You haven't heard. There's lots.
So where did they take you then? Because did you go to, they send you to a boarding home or what?
Girls'
that
home. Girls' home. So I went to Bollard Girls' Home, and I went to Allendale, I think it was, Girls' Home, but Bollard is what I remember. Bollard came up when they had the great... investigating all the girls' homes back then, because there was lots of sexual abuse.
Oh, so and last, like, was it a year ago, they were doing that big Royal Commission?
Yeah, and actually one of my mates that I grew up with went, and she ended up in Bollard. Yeah, so she was part of that investigation. Luckily I wasn't. It was a good experience for me, but unfortunately when you got to the girls' home, they stick you, back then they stuck you in a cell, an actual cell that's underneath the girls' home.
It's more like a prison.
It was a prison. Well, it had bars. It was a cell. That's where you were put. You didn't even know anything about the girls' home. You don't know anything. You just stuck straight in the cell. You stay there for a little while.
For how long?
I can't remember. You just stay there.
So like
I remember is I was so hungry because I hadn't eaten because I was a street kid and you don't get a lot of food. So I was a skinny little rat. And I remember getting a peanut butter sandwich and just couldn't believe my luck. Like, this was fantastic.
Well, you were in the cell.
Yeah. While I was in the cell, they gave me a peanut butter sandwich. And I couldn't even eat it all because I was so hungry. And when you're really hungry, you actually can't eat a lot when you do eat.
Yeah.
And I remember not being able to eat it all, but feeling so amazing that I had this peanut butter sandwich. Like, this is great. But also realising I was in a cell. So
was that to tame you or something? Is that
I think it was to shock you. It was to shock you.
Get you under control.
Yeah, pretty much, because you're in a girls' home, so it had to have some sense of real authority there. That was almost police authority.
So it's breaking you in, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And then you get de-liced and knitted or whatever it was. You know, just like you were going to prison. Same stuff. It was horrific. In fact, girls did have to line up in front of men to do that. And that is what a lot of that inquiry was about, the ways that we treated these kids that came off the streets or runaways.
I wonder if it's
pretty bad.
Does it still happen? That's the question.
Well, you know, I think that...
I think it probably does.
You would ask me about what I thought about the girls' home, I actually think that the setup of a girls' home was actually amazing for me. I loved the fact of being safe.
Yeah.
The doors were locked. It didn't bother me. I actually learned how to pick the locks and get out anyway, so...
But you came back.
I did. Because I actually quite liked it there. But I just needed to know I could leave if I wanted to. And I did. I did escape a few times and get brought back in, put back down in the cell. But I think the concept of the girls' home was actually really good. A very safe environment if it was run properly. And if we had the checks and balances in place today that we know now, I think a girls' home ran correctly is a great nourishing environment. It could be a beautiful place.
More nourishing than the streets.
Oh, heck yeah. And more nourishing than maybe your community where you felt unsafe. For me, I felt unsafe in my community. It wasn't so much that I felt unsafe in my home. It's because of what happened to me in my community.
Yeah.
My whole community felt unsafe for me.
Right.
So I didn't feel safe anywhere near anything. I needed to get as far away from everything as I possibly could. In fact, when my dad used to drive me to school, I used to look at the hills in front of me and just think about my plan was just to get over that hill. Whatever's over that hill is where I want to be because it's away from here.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I would do. I would go to school and I would just get on a bus and leave. I wouldn't know where I was going and I'd just go. I'd just get over the next hill. Just get over the next hill, Marie, because wherever that is better than here.
Just get away.
Yeah, just get away. And that's how I live my life, running.
Running, 12, running. I think you said you...
13.
13, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. 13, 14, 15 were just absolutely wasted years. Yeah.
Well, not entirely because it informs... Everything you do now.
Yeah, very chunky years.
Yeah, not saying we recommend it.
No, I wouldn't recommend it.
But I don't want to
Yeah, I would not. Look, Aaron, where I am now in my life, and I look back and I think, ooh, when I can see every little part of it, and I'm like, ooh, how did you survive that, girl? It's massive. However, I wouldn't change any of it for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to relive it. Put it that way. I wouldn't want to relive it again. But I wouldn't change any of it now because the insight that I have on human nature or how we work with things
or how we treat
people, it's massive for me. So, but sometimes even that can get overwhelming for me because people start to wonder, how do you know so much? And then you've got to tell a bit of your story. You know, and then you kind of like, what part of my story do you want me to pick out? Because there's just so much more to that.
Yeah.
And it starts to get like, whew, it's a big story. So kind of I've talked to you about that, where I'm at a stage now where I think I'm going to use my story for others. It's just figuring a way to do that. That is the most helpful way, I think. So I can leave something when I do leave this earth – something behind that hopefully may alleviate another person's life so they can live life and not feel like they're just dragging themselves through it to the end.
Yeah,
we don't want to do that.
Did you ever keep in touch with any of those other street kids? Do you know where they're at
in
their life? Oh,
what a great question, Aaron, because the beauty of this is that I have two wonderful friends, Doc and Sharon. Actually, both their names are Sharon. They're both called Sharon.
Yeah.
But I call one Doc. She's this fiery redhead. And there's Sharon. And both of them grew up with me over that time. And we are still buddies. Like I said, one of them went to Bollard Girls Home.
Yeah.
After me, she was just after me, she went through. And my dear friend Doc, she was our level-headed one. She was, she honestly was. Well, she wasn't a street kid.
Oh.
No, she was our level-headed friend. She was the one that went home on time, who didn't drink very much, never smoked cigarettes. She just was the level-headed one, and she could stick with us and be friends with us. So, and our friendship today is... Oh my gosh, we'll probably end up in an old people's home together. One of my friends lives in Australia and the other one's up in Auckland, and we still get together. My friend from Aussie comes home and we'll get together and we'll spend time together, and my friend Doc and her husband come down and we spend time together. Yeah, our lives are intertwined massively. Strong, strong friendship. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, look, we've come to the time for the end of the show. We started off talking about responding out of trauma. And explain that what that was. If you tuned in halfway through, pick up the podcast later on to get to the start of that. But then we seem to have gone sideways
into
the territory, but that's been kind of fascinating. Because I know little bits here and there, you've talked about little bits here and there on the radio, but that was a new bit about being chased across fields by the cops when you're like a 14-year-old girl.
That's a story on its own, and
Well, look, thank you for coming in. Is there anything you want to say to wrap up, or are we going to head on out?
Be kind and gentle to yourself. And if you one of the lucky ones who've gotten through life unscathed, is the word, I think, then maybe upskill yourself to support others so that you're not looking through your own experience and how you think others should behave in a certain situation, but maybe open yourself up to know that people are carrying trauma and they may respond differently, and maybe you could do something to support them in that moment.
And don't tell them in the moment that they're responding out of trauma.
And to calm down.
That's the first rule is don't do those two things.
It's not going to work.
All right, Marie, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.